The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy,
it's time to get this party started. It's the
Footy, footy,
it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
Andy, Jimmy, and JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
Footy, footy.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Always knows this stuff.
Yeah.
All right, 3, 2, and 1. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime
World Daily.
Sorry, JC, you were doing a snake noise there, apparently.
Yeah, that's my new thing.
Oh, is it?
So it's like, instead of being like, yeah, it's like slithery.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Get it?
No, I don't get it at all.
It's fine.
Here we are. Match day 8, everyone. It's still going, this World Cup, and still performing, and lots of goals being scored, lots of storylines, in fact. Today, we got 4 more for you. Czechia, South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico, South Korea. We got great Switzerland, game. Bosnia, Herzegovina, and a little Maracana against Qatar. Back on the pitch. Must win time. We're going to get right into that shortly with David Edgar, former Canadian international, former Premier League footballer. Most recently, the BBC's new star. We'll find out about his experience on BBC. The BBC sent him a mic, a special mic, just for this interview.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, can we get Jimmy to work for them?
Yeah.
Ouch. If Jimmy listens to this, he'd be upset.
And Craig.
And Craig.
Okay, but I have a question, though, and I will maybe ask David this question. You know, you see a lot of the British commentators where they've got almost like that lip piece that keeps the mic really close to their mouths. I wonder if it's that type of mic.
I don't think it is.
The podcast.
That'd be kind of cool, though, right? If there's exterior noise, then you kind of need that, right? So we're Craig. I bet Craig does.
Yeah.
Craig's doing the media stands, right? In the media tribune.
Absolutely. And remind me, Sharms, when Craig's on next time, let's talk about it, because he went down a rabbit hole with me where he explained why it's so useful, especially for two people, color and play-by-play, calling it, is he did, obviously we'll explain it way better, but there is a kind of a dance of who's talking, who's not. We've got into that dance virtually where we still interrupt each other every once in a while. But we've learned who's talking, who has pregnant pauses, and who talks nonstop, yabber yabber Amy Walsh on the comments.
we know who has
pregnant pauses, Craig Forrest. Craig,
and who gives birth to blather.
Blatherer. Yeah, you know that I find that interesting, that kind of conversation about the technical machinations of calling games. No one else listening will.
But I don't know if that's true.
Oh, I'm
because
sure.
I remember on our Instagram, Dubs was calling a game with Cigna, I think on CBC, and she just did a little behind the scenes, and that Instagram took off. And I'm not sure every platform is the same. We're still trying to figure that out. Once again, Jethro 1963 with your crass chat about our 4,000 subs. We've worked hard at that, Jethro. Not to give you too much airtime, but we worked hard at it. But it took off. People like to know those little things behind the scenes, Sharms. And I think this, once again, you live in a star bubble. You've been a great-looking on-air person for 20 years, 30 years now. And you don't recognize that people like to know what's going on behind. Like Dubs right now, we see her bed. People in the radio land and podland, we see her bed. We don't know how many people that are in that bed right now or in the bathroom hiding. There could be like 17
media
people.
Media hijinks, probably many.
Yes.
You know how it is in this world of ours, this glamorous media world of ours, and what happens, the shenanigans that happens after the light goes off. Yeah, it's very exciting indeed.
And people
But yeah, when
People like the behind the scenes. Like they really do. They don't know how it works.
Actually, there's a football commentator, and Clive Tilsley, he's called. He's a famous guy in England. He does social media clips of how he prepares for a match and how he's got his little book and his sheets of paper information, and it kills on social. Really interesting. So, and Dubs, you've done it before, like Wonga said there. And for some reason, when the broadcast do social media, it always does well. I think the broadcast audience love their socials. It resonates more even than just us. It's probably a very good reason for that. But it just does. You get better numbers.
But Sharms, you did a social yesterday, and you talked about what things you really like seeing on the pitch, and it was the injury. Do you mind talking about that? Because
no, I never thought I want to draw people to watch my social media.
Yes. Follow up.
Dubs is frozen, by the way.
Who is?
Dubs.
Oh. Yeah, she is frozen. She's totally right now. She's frozen for talking for the last 5 minutes. She's been talking for 5 minutes. Hasn't realized that she's frozen yet.
Well, it hasn't mattered because you and I are monopolizing the chat.
We are absolutely.
I loved it because I watched it, and then the next thing I know, I said, you know what? I love that too. I just have never expressed it. So can you please recapture your kind of your grouse / spite / little enjoyment of Schadenfreude?
It's just something I just find really amusing. And you watch this World Cup and you watch so many games, you realize the little things you like. And there's this moment in every match, happens several times, where a player goes down injured and he stays down away from the play. Right. And he's expecting to get a call from the linesman or the referee or his teammates or the opponents to stop, but they don't. Play continues. And usually it's a wide shot on the TV. So you see him down and the play continues at the other end. Meanwhile, he's like, what the hell? I'm hurt here. And then he stands up, right, tepidly. And then he always does the limp because he's been really badly hurt. Right. So he does this fake limp. And people are still ignoring him because he thinks people are watching him. Oh, I better pretend this is actually a real injury. And then
like within two steps, right?
Yeah,
two or three steps. Yeah.
And then he's fine. He's walking and he's running. It's like, you lying, conniving, cheating piece of scum.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. It makes me really thoroughly enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. I have to say too, as a player, sometimes when that happened, if you were in an advantageous position and you had a player down and it was somebody who routinely did, like the women's game, we have less flopping than in the men's game. Like we stay on our feet mostly, it should be said, aside from a couple of Central American and South American teams that shall not be named. But if you had a player go down and you recognize that this player on your team was used to feigning injury or play acting, or you just didn't have time for it, you would ignore such player. But if it was somebody who never went down, you'd be like, oh, good God. And you like put it in the stands because you knew that they were really hurt. So I wonder if like, yes, it's like team game management and like tactics, gamesmanship, that sort of thing. But it's also you recognize who it is that's down.
Yeah. It's also it reminds me of parenting when your child or you're babysitting your niece, your nephew, or you're just around kids where there's a kid having a bit of a breakdown, a meltdown. And you
tantrum.
Put them in the corner to ignore them. You know what I mean? And you forget about them sometimes. And they're off in the corner. And then they think they're trying to be performative, right? With the bottom lip, like going in and out and bawling. And you put them away over in that corner. You forget about them. And they still are trying to be performative. And then they realize everyone's forgotten about them and they want to come back and join the group.
And then you get still home from No Frills and you're like, oh shit, I forgot the baby. Oops,
this has happened. Yes, he's on the top of the car.
Are you talking about Ronaldo in the game yesterday? Or you're
well, that was close.
It's almost that.
There is a level of performance, right? Where they have to fake it. And the kid and that faking scummy, as I'm trying to find the words that Charms used. Cheating, lying. Thank you. Yeah, that player just lying there, trying to pretend that they were hurt at all. That you're right. So thank you, Sharms, for sharing that inside.
I compel everyone to check out my social media feed. Watching great numbers. Okay, because I need that.
Let's bring the power of Sharms compels.
Let's get our guest's opinion on this.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
Let's bring in David Edgar, former Canadian international, English, spent years in England, Premier League. Eddie, welcome to Footy Prime. And I should say, I mentioned before, you are the BBC's latest star. And he gave you a nice mic. So we're excited to hear how crisp you sound and how professional you sound.
Test. Is it working?
Yeah. Oh,
right, good. Oh, good. Man. Just plug it in for a sec. Yeah. You know, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
We deal with Jimmy Brennan and Craig Forrest and their mic issues every for 6 years. Yeah. And you sound better already after 3.5 seconds. So I appreciate you joining us. So we're just talking about that. You know, every match you see it in football where a player goes down hurt, but he gets ignored by everyone. And then he eventually sheepishly gets to his feet and then does the old fake limp to show that, yeah, I really was hurt. Was that ever you? Did you ever do that?
Never. I can't even imagine staying down. I stayed down once and I was unconscious, I think. But, and I'm not trying to act like a tough man.
That's fair.
That was just how we played the game. I think things have changed. But what I will say is the new rule, you've started noticing players like, and I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but you've started noticing players not staying down and it's getting up. The teammates are saying, get up. There's no, and nobody wants to stay off the pitch for a minute. So it's kind of bringing back that mentality. And it made me realize how much time wasted there actually was, players sitting on the ground. So yeah, I'm happy with it.
It's one of another FIFA rule that works. It's like the hydration breaks and like this time wasting rules. It's all good for the game. We're really happy about that. Eddie, we'll get to the Canada game in a little bit, but I want to talk about yesterday's games quickly as well. Mm-hmm. I want to start Portugal against Congo, and the big story is Ronaldo. And to me, it's not that he was ineffective, because a number of his teammates were also ineffective yesterday, but the fact that he stayed on the pitch the entire time. And that you saw some of the Neto come off, Neves come off, Bernardo Silva came off, taken off, but Ronaldo stays on the pitch. Are we making too much of this, or is he really becoming a problem? Because you look at the headlines right now around the football media, and they're targeting Ronaldo after one match, a guy that scored so many goals after one match. Mm. But is that criticism directed properly?
Oh, that's a tough one. I got Portuguese in-laws, so it's been a tough, yeah. And I can imagine what Ronaldo was thinking the night before that game after those players did what they did the day before, right? You can think what's going through his head. We know that's how he thinks and stuff, but I think it was Thierry Henry said something. It's the team that scores the goal. It's not the individual, and I know it sounds so simple, but I'm not sure that's the case there. You look at Argentina and Messi scores, and they're trying to get him to score. And I don't think that's the case at Portugal. And I don't know if it's the pressure for him to stay on the pitch to score, because he can. We know he can score goals. We know he's got that in him, and he will if he gets a chance. But it just doesn't look right at the minute. Like you said, nobody else was really at it yesterday either, but just looks so far off of it.
And you know the next few days, that will be conflated, right? In the Portuguese media. And it's going to get a bigger and bigger thing. And then he's going to come out next match against, I think, who's it playing next? Is it? I forget who it is now. Anyway, who's playing next? I think it's Uzbekistan, actually. I think it is.
Yeah.
He's going to score a hat trick.
Yeah.
100%. That's kind of
and all be forgiven.
Yeah, all is forgiven. Absolutely. Yeah.
And forgotten. Not just forgiven, but forgotten. Because everyone will be like, goldfish. Oh, Ronaldo's up with those three other players on that Mount Rushmore of soccer players, right?
Yeah, but I think to David's point, it paled that performance did from Ronaldo in comparison to the top billing of the superstars who showed up and delivered for their teams. And you know that he was watching that and desperately wanting to match it, if not exceed it. And so the pressure will be on certainly for the next match.
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing day before, right? All those goals. Then Kane scores a couple yesterday as well. Right. There's a ton of goals in this World Cup so far. They're on track, I think, to score the most goals ever at a World Cup. Now, it's one round into the group phase. As you know, Eddie, things get a little cagier and tighter as you go further into a tournament like this. But, I mean, is there a reason? Do you think people are saying the ball's moving really quickly, right? I don't know if there's anything to that. Is it just that they're really good finishers and teams are actually playing pretty attacking football? It's not your typical, park the bus for most cases.
I think, honestly, Jim, that's what it is. I think more teams and teams that the best part about the World Cup is a lot of fans coming to watch this don't really know the tackle ins and outs of different countries and aren't really up to date with it. So it's super exciting to come see it. You see, they might watch the Premier League week in, week out, and you got a lot of teams playing the same way, and football isn't exciting. And then they're introduced to the World Cup, and it's like, okay, ooh, this is interesting. Like, you've got a lot of teams playing attacking football. They're not, you're going to sit back in a low block, but how do teams like an Argentina break down a low block, and they can do it? So it's exciting, it's different, and I think that's the main thing for people watching. It's exciting football.
Hey, Dubs, I'd say it's also really bad goalkeeping, but Craig's not here, so it's not as much fun. Right?
No, it's not. You want to be able to back that up with the technical.
Yeah.
There has been, for sure. But I think it's to your point as well that there's been some really positive attacking football and lots of looks at the net and lots of great shots. And yeah, the ball's moving. There might be like some nuance to it. But yes, the goalkeepers, I think it's easy to scapegoat them at times. But I think there's been a couple of suspect performances in between the sticks.
It also shows, sorry, Sharms, it shows, I just think of the 48 teams, right? All of a sudden, you're sitting there going, oh, there really are only 24 amazing goalkeepers in the tournament, because there's, you know, some countries have two or three deep that could be starting somewhere. And some of these goalkeepers are new to this. It's their debut, and the pressure and the amount of being hey, I have to be a boss on this team. That changes every match where they're playing. I wanted to ask Craig yesterday about, you know, when you're playing an elite scorer, does that change your game? And I said that to Dubs last night over a pint, and she goes, that was a good question, but I didn't get it. So I'm just once again doing this myself.
That's why you're doing it. You literally brought that up because you could mention that Amy said that it was a good question.
And I'm doing this.
But a good question for Craig. But yeah. I think, you know, if you ask Jesse Marsh about your opponent, of course you're making some tactical adjustments for Qatar, maybe doing things slightly different than you did things versus Bosnia, but your focus is on yourself. So I think you can answer Wanger's question in the same way as a goalkeeper. Your technique, your placement, your adjustments, the way you command your box, your shot stopping, the way that you don't want to spill a rebound like Zidane did to the feet of Messi, who's already seen that like two and three movements in advance to be able to just side foot that in the net. Like, you want to be able to help yourself out and the team in front of you. So can you parry it wide? Can you not spill it right to, you know, the edge of your 6-yard box? There are certain principles that are always there and should be there as foundational to good goalkeeping, or center back, or a winger, or a midfielder. Like, there are things that you're just doing because that's central to your game and that's central to your success. And maybe little tweaks here and there for somebody who might have a pop from distance, right? So you're tuned into that the same way that you're prepared for penalties, and you've got your, you know, Jordan Pickford water bottle, and you're hoping that one of the ball boys isn't stealing it because they are covertly working for the opposition.
Is Pickford a great goalkeeper, Eddie? I mean, he's been the man, the staple between the pipes for England for a long time. He stayed at Everton for years and years. He's been very loyal, but no massive clubs come in for him, as far as you know. He's fine. He's going to be good enough. But is he, in your minds, a great goalkeeper? I'm always a little bit confused with Jordan Pickford.
Ooh, it's a tough one asking me. Or sat next to my dad and my uncle, ex-goalies, and Jordies as well. So you understand, he's from Sunderland. Yeah. But he's a fantastic goalie. But there is something, I think, personally, that's stopping him from getting to be that top keeper. You see a couple times in the first half yesterday, making a few mistakes. And they don't come to anything. But it's also in Pickford's personality to be able to play that way, that sort of brashness and confidence on the ball. So it's, I feel like he could get caught out in a major tournament like this. He gets caught out in the Premier League at times. So, I mean, it's in a tournament like this, as you go on further and further again, look at Messi. We talk about, it makes it look easy, right? But that's not an easy finish. And you're playing against players like that as we move forward in this tournament.
I think he gets picked because he looks like he could be playing in 1966.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. He could be that goalkeeper because he's got the hair, he's got the old, you know, I don't know, he's not an old guy by any stretch, but he just has that look.
No, he's old-timey.
Old-timey, yeah.
Yeah.
He's old-timey.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason it helps him, I think. But as long as England are scoring four goals, who cares? He missed a couple of mistakes. It was an impressive performance against Croatia, I thought, Eddie, overall. And Harry Kane, I mean, listen, we talk about Haaland and Messi and Mbappe. I think you've got to put him in that group as the top strikers in this World Cup. He's coming off maybe the best season now of all of them, actually, with Bayern Munich. He looks, I don't know, there's certain difference that's going to Bayern Munich. Maybe it's simply just because he's not a Tottenham player anymore and he's getting trophies. But there's a newfound confidence, swagger, and the confidence that we have in him as opposed to necessarily just he has on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, what Bayern Munich did under Kompany this year definitely suited Harry Kane. He's dropping into that 10 position. He was receiving at the edge of his 18-yard box yesterday, right? So how do you defend that? There's not many players in the world that can do that with his footballing intelligence. So it's you've got him playing well, but England as a whole were exciting. I think they were just more dynamic, more exciting to watch previously as an England fan. And it was just, you've got players coming off the bench and you had a manager who was brave in his substitutions as well at 2-1, where he's gone and made those three attacking substitutions where you could put on a holding midfielder, or defensive midfielder, which the rhetoric may always be that, but you could concede, you could put those three subs on attacking and concede 2-2 and everyone should say you got to put a holding midfielder on, but he's gone brave. And I think that's what England needs. England needs that bravery, that gambler to go, all right, go and win it by two or three, because we've got Pickford in goal. We might concede one or two, right? So,
yeah, Dubs, we haven't seen an England coach do that for I don't know how long, being that aggressive and want to say, yeah, 3-2 is fine, but we want four. We want another one. I'm not sure if you saw his post-match press conference.
I did.
Quite personality. He's great, right? And they're talking about the speech he may or may not have given at halftime. And he just says, I just told the boys, listen, keep doing what we're supposed to be doing here. This is the message. You know, I don't care if you make a mistake. I don't care if we concede. This is who we are now. Like, wow. Mm-hmm. Is Gareth Southgate watching?
Yeah, I thought it was really impressive. And there have been questions about Tuchel and the squad that he's selected and the style that he's playing. But I mean, clearly that second half, like he just let them go. Like the shackles were off. Like take off the handbrake, just go out and go. I think he was mentioning on the second goal that they conceded that Croatia scored. He's like, we looked at it, and this is part of his halftime talk. He's like, we were almost playing a back seven and we still conceded. He's like, it's halftime. We've played 45 minutes. What are you meant to be protecting? We haven't even secured a result. Go out there and play. And I think it was just like all the stress and the expectations were lifted in that moment to have a coach who's clearly backing the players. And he said like the last 17 days, so the time that they've spent in camp, clearly working and honing this system to bring the best out of all the players so they can go out and express themselves. And I think he felt like they were muted and they were overwhelmed a little bit about the stage, perhaps, maybe not the opponent, but just we have to deliver on a result. So fixated on that they forgot that they could also play a football match and maybe enjoy themselves. And I think you saw a second half where they were just unleashed. And whether it's the manager's doing or not, I don't think it has a massive part of what ended up happening, but it was, I think, exactly the lift that the players needed, almost to just go out and do it, like approval to just, yeah, let's just go and play. And you saw the best of them there, I thought.
Yeah,
David Edgar joins myself. Sorry, go ahead. Okay.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. From a player's perspective, when a manager gives you that, takes the expectation of winning, like I heard what he said, it's like, we trust and believe in what you're doing, results off the table. as an England player, you know what that, like, I obviously don't know, but the pressure to get results, when that's taken away, you've actually seen them take the handbrake off physically. It's gone mm-hmm. and played out with a freedom. So, and I think that that's a manager's job. The X's and O's yeah. are what they are. Everyone can do that. But that the manager to go out there and say, no, I still believe in you no matter what, but we're going to do it this way. And win, lose, or draw, I'm proud of you guys. You know what it's like. It takes the pressure off completely.
Yeah, it's the unburdening, right? You're mm-hmm. 100% right that's part of the manager's job to make sure that they're managing that, like the weight of it. And for England, I don't know. I mean, you could argue that there are other countries that are up there, but just given their history, I don't know if it's anyone bears that more so than these England players. So for the fact that he just did that and he went and he was like, yeah, go. Just go do it.
Yeah.
Well, Dave and Sharms, how did you guys, because I remember yesterday Dubs was doing a lot of travel, but how did you guys watch the match? Who were you surrounded by, and what was that vibe like? Were you on pins and needles, or is this even your team? So Dave, I know you're cheering for Canada. Is England your other team? Is that allowed? I know it's allowed in Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, it's allowed.
I'll be honest. Yeah, 100%. It's funny you should mention that, because I did. There was definitely a feeling that was different me watching it than as the previous years. 2022, it was a different feeling, but not as much. It was like I was watching another game, but I was waiting for the Canada game tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? I'm a Canada. I'm Canadian, Canada fan. Whereas in the past, it was England and everything. And don't get me wrong, we were still, my uncle owns a pub here in Kitchener, and we watched, he's got massive TVs. So we watched the game there he's got his mates over from Newcastle, and all my daughters were there. And so we always try and do that as a family thing. And that's tradition. So that's what we try and
do. Yeah. Early drinking is important for later years.
Yeah. Get the girls started early. That's
right. They need to know. Ask Dubs.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what we did. So it was enjoyable, and obviously we'll probably try and do the same for the next game. Hopefully get outside and watch it.
James Charman, how did you?
Yeah. Oh, you wait. You want to hear this? It's pretty great. I was by myself in my hotel room. And until the second half of the second half, when I was in the back of an Uber going to training. So yeah, it was great. It's just how I want to watch my team's play, really. That, if I could choose, that would be it. Yeah.
Did you have the TSN app?
Yeah. Hmm?
Did you have the TSN app flowing in the Uber, at least?
Faisal had it on his laptop. I don't know how he did it. Oh. Mm. But he managed it. But I'll say, you know, to Eddie's point there, there wasn't a doubt, I'm Canada first these days, but if there was ever, you know, a conflict, and when it comes down to it, who am I really, you know, who's my number one now? It's Canada, and I know that from yesterday, because I remember how I felt during the Canada match, and the palms were a lot more sweaty than they were for the England match yesterday. And England Croatia's got history, right? That's a tough match. They always worry me. And I enjoyed the match, but it wasn't pins and needles. It wasn't on the edge of my seat quite as much.
It wasn't. It wasn't corduroy slacks that got you excited.
No, but I was. I mean, listen, I still supporting England, of course. I was still, you know, anticipating a fascinating match, and it was great. I really enjoyed it. But there were days, man, in the past, you guys know, with your team, when you don't really enjoy the match at all because you're so nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday was a little bit different.
How were you feeling when Croatia put in that second goal to draw them level? Mm. Was the feelings of self-loathing and the doomsday, like all that rhetoric, did all that start?
Oh, Dubs, I think they're always there.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't stop. Then they were there in the background lingering because, you know, England.
The dark passenger.
The dark passenger was sitting on my shoulder saying, no, don't get too confident now. You know what's coming. Although when I saw Luka Modric do what he did to concede that penalty, I thought, wow, something, maybe the footballing gods are switching and turning, because that's very un-Modric-like. It was clumsy, and that's not a word you could ever use for him.
And then Kane gets a second crack at it and buries it.
Yeah, no kidding, right? The old encroachment off the line. Is it considered encroachment off the line for the goalkeeper? It's encroachment in the area.
I didn't know. Yeah, sorry. I saw both. There was a goalkeeper, but I thought it was more the defenders coming in. And then Sky Sports News, they said the defender, so I'm not sure.
Same. I think on the call, they were talking about looking at the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And then even, I think, whoever the analyst was, like, you know, this looks really tight, but, you know, maybe England gets lucky here and they get to take it again, and they did. But then I think I was reading an Athletic article, and it was clearly... like to the right of the D, if you're looking at the goal, it was two defenders for Croatia definitely stepped into the area because the lines of the 18 are part of the area. So if you're on the line, you're encroaching. But he's like well into the 18-yard box.
Yeah.
I was on a show just before this one, and they asked me who's doing the World Cup better, Vancouver or Toronto? And I gave a very diplomatic answer, so I'm not going to go down that. But Wonga, you and JC were hosting an event yesterday at Earl's for the Ghana-Panama match, which, I mean, not a great match, but man, the drama at the end was fantastic.
Yeah, I would argue with you, though, just a little quick. Everyone's been bashing me about that Japan match that I said and Holland that was boring. At least I said the first half was. Last night's match, it was back and forth. There weren't a lot of goals, but it was... there were an abundance of plays that were opportunities to score. And you have a pint in your hand. That was a watchable game. And maybe my problem is don't watch a match without a pint in your hand. I think that's what I have to learn from this.
It's like a concert. It's the same thing, right?
It
sports
is.
Events and concerts. You need a pint in your hand. I was stuck in the sterile media center at BC Place with maybe the worst coffee I've ever had in my life. So that was my... enjoyment for that match. But how was Toronto? I mean, I saw the video that on TSM was showing the clips downtown. It looked pretty amazing when the Guardians came out of the stadium.
Yeah, the city was buzzing, just walking around.
Absolutely.
Tons of jerseys, tons of England kit still knocking around. I'm pretty sure I saw, is it Ollie Bassett who plays in his CPL, Nate's buddy, who was looking for a place to play? I'm fairly certain I walked past him. I almost called out, but I was like, maybe that's not him. But yeah, the Ghanaian fans were just absolutely buzzing in the city yesterday. It was great. It was good energy, good vibe. So to the question where it's like Vancouver or Toronto, it's both. It can be both.
It's brilliant here. Everyone's wearing a soccer shirt. Every store's got some kind of World Cup something or other in it. It's theme. It's just, it's brilliant. It's a buzz. Colombia beat Uzbekistan in a really interesting match. And the late one last night, Jimmy Brennan was on the call for that one in the panel.
Electric blue suit.
Oh,
electric blue suit. Oh my God.
He rocks it, doesn't he? He rocks that suit well. It looks good. But yeah, Colombia take that one 3-1, although Uzbekistan had their chances. Hey, JC, let's get some Canada talk, shall we?
Well, actually, Wonger came up with a little jingle which he'd like to sing for us.
Oh, I didn't know.
Introduce
here it goes.
Our wonderful segment.
I'm debuting it. It's the World Cup watch. Canada, it's the World Cup watch, Canada, brought to you by Tim Hortons. There you go.
It's game on with Tim's. It's game on with Tim.
It's tragic.
Eddie, when you did the BBC, was it similar to this?
It was a bit more professional, guys, I'll be honest.
You don't say. You don't say.
No, I don't believe that. I take offense to that. All right, so we have Canada against Qatar later today. It's must win. Simple as that. Not mathematically, perhaps, but it's must win. At the press conference, Jesse Marshall's asked, is it the biggest game in this program's history, men's program's history? And he mentioned the women and the Olympic gold. He mentioned Copa America. He mentioned Qatar. For you, Eddie, is this, not to put too much pressure on the players, but hey, it's kind of our job. Is it the biggest ever?
Yeah, I mean, I like Jesse's answer last week when he said that they asked if it was like the biggest game of their careers last week, right? And the biggest game of the nation last week. So, and you probably heard that 50, 60 times well in your career, as he has as a manager. So the players, I don't think us saying anything is going to put any more pressure on what they're already doing or internally. They know what, this has been a long sort of process of what they're trying to do as a group and expand the game in this country. And last Friday went a long way to doing that. And I think, yes, it's a must win tonight because of all of the other things, because of your opponent, because of what happened in the first two games on both sides. And then obviously you'll know the result going into the game based on the other group, right? So we've said it, and it's the biggest game in his history.
Were you a player that was able to remove the pressure when you hit, when you crossed the lines, hit the pitch, and just like focused on the game itself? Or would you feel pressure in big games, be it for your club or for the country?
I wish I could say I was one of those. I think looking back now and all the sort of work I've done on myself, I would be in a much better place. But I was pretty an anxious player. I used to really get worked up before games. It would start on a Friday, but as soon as that match day minus one would finish, and it would be, and I thought it was normal through my whole career. I thought it was, you're supposed to feel sick for 24 hours before a game. that's what you're supposed to feel like. But truthfully, that, and it wasn't, it's just so much wasted energy I probably had throughout my career. But that's how I thought I had to prepare. That's, it was that intensity. It was me sort of getting in the zone. But yeah, it's, I wish I could say it was all easygoing with me, but I think if you heard me on the field too, it was a fear of the way I played football was the fear of losing that jersey, a fear of losing my position. And because where I played in England, it would happen a lot. It was the Canadian guy come back from playing for Canada and okay, you're on the bench again. So it was a fear of losing my starting position at all times, which helps you, but it also can, we were talking before about the releasing that fear of expectations and just going on there and play with the freedom. And you can do that. But when you step over the white line sometimes in those games, you'd be lying if you said, like, obviously Messi said something last night about just having enjoyment and love for it. And you can see plays like that. Whereas some players stiffen up until you have that first couple touches. I was a guy who I needed to win my first header, tackle, complete my first pass before things settled down. So, yeah. Long answer, but I wish it could have been easier.
Great insight. Yeah.
It's a good answer because you do hear so much about, you know, oh, be happy, just be loose, take the shackles off, enjoy the ball. And the reality is, I mean, Dubs, you were an intense player. Were you someone that, did you enjoy the match itself or was it after the fact you enjoyed it?
No, when I was at my best, I was enjoying the match itself and the individual moments. And, you know, if you're, okay, this 15 minutes, we really want to go at them. And that's what Canada have to do in the first 15 minutes versus Qatar, and talk about shackles off and like all of that weight lifted. If somebody is able to bag a goal, preferably Jonathan David, I think you'll just see like everybody's shoulders drop. But I loved what Eddie is saying about sometimes playing with fear. And that's when I was at my worst, whether it was fear of making a mistake, fear of, you know, expectations I put on myself as like one of three internationals playing in the first iteration of a pro league in the US off the back of the success of the 99 Women's World Cup. Those were probably expectations placed on myself and unfairly. But when you play with that type of negativity as the driving force, you can't ever reach your utmost potential. You just will not. So what you said, David, about Messi talking about the joy and the love, like that is when we worked with a mental performance coach. He had us like kind of took us through our paces and asked us a bunch of stuff. It was a very collaborative approach. And I've talked about this on this podcast in the past. And like the opposite of fear isn't bravery. The opposite of fear is love. Mm-hmm. And so when you play with a love for your country, for your teammates, for the game, for the experience, that can be transformative. And so it's not that simplistic. It's not just that will fix everything. That will fix what's ailing the guy who's supposed to be our prolific goal scorer for Canada and Jonathan David. It's not that easy. But when you can frame it in a way that's just about enjoying the experience and letting it wash over you and embracing it all versus letting fear be the driving force of losing your place or letting a nation down, whatever it is that the story that you're telling yourself, if you open it up and make it about love and joy, it can absolutely elevate your game.
Oh man.
we'll get a transcript.
Yeah.
That was all you, Eddie. Is everything that you said.
That was brilliant.
Because like it makes me emotional, right? Because you're lucky to be in football. I still feel 100%. Privileged to be able to talk about it. And as a player, like it's a once in a lifetime and one in a million experience. I never forgot like listening to the anthem that I got the opportunity to do that and somebody didn't, right?
Yeah.
So like you don't take that for granted. So make it positive.
100%.
You know, when I hear those stories, Eddie, and you mentioned how what you struggle with the stress and the tension. I mean, it is sad, right? Because as someone that could never play at any kind of level, I always think, man, how amazing would that be to be a professional footballer? You know, and it is in many ways, but there's so much more to it than that. Like Amy was saying there, it isn't easy. I think that's why there might be a divide and friction between the media and the players so often, because it's our job to amplify everything and to make it seem way bigger than it actually is and the importance. But that's because we have to make content and stories. I can understand if you can't shut off the media as a footballer, I can see why you're like, oh my God, well, these guys just give it a rest. If John David, I don't think he is the kind of guy to be on social media every night and to, you know, looking at sportsnet.ca and wearefootyprime.com. I don't think he probably is. But if he was, you could see why he just doesn't want to have anything to do with the media. Like, guys, give it a break.
Yeah. No, it's funny you should say that. I was actually just saying to my wife how much I enjoyed doing the media side on the BBC. And why I've not been against it. I've always sort of thought my path was going to be, and still do, in coaching. I've just finished my licensing. I've recently interviewed for a job, but I really enjoyed that. And I kind of went away from it because of that, because of what I would have to say about professionals that I was in those positions. I will always be honest in what I see. And that's how I am about football. But also I was saying to her, there's so much more to what goes on. Like, he's not, okay, he might not score, but okay, how was his day? How's his family? What's happening? How's his kids? Like, those are the types of things that, and I think why you're saying there is a divide, because yeah, it's an absolute honor to do what we did and play football and be a professional and get these guys get paid the money they get paid. But I think the media then says, well, you have to be this way. You have to be grateful for it. You can be grateful and still go through tough times, and you can be a great player and still go through those moments. But when there is that media, it's human nature, right? It's whether Jonathan David's the type of person that water off a duck's back or not. It's human nature to know that people are having this feeling, this conversation about you. And it's not easy. So I was never in a position to be spoken about that much. Like those guys, these are goal scorers. So the pressure is on them, right? It's always going to be, but they chose that and they thrive off that. And it'll take one goal to change everything. And then obviously everyone wants to give him a hug and he'll do interviews. And that's the roller coaster, but you sign up for it as a player. So I get both sides of it.
Isn't that funny? You know, all this conversation about one player this last few days, even few weeks, given the Juventus, it takes one goal. It's all it takes.
One goal.
And suddenly we're all championing this amazing forward that Canada has, you know, the greatest they've probably ever had in that position. Yeah. And like, oh, yeah.
Deflection, a tap in, anything. Mm-hmm. Go off his back and go in. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a strange one.
But against Qatar, I mean, listen, he's got a good opportunity, right? And I think we do elevate teams and, oh, yeah, they got a draw against Switzerland. But if you watch that match, they weren't very good. Switzerland should have scored many, many more goals. What is your expectation today for Canada? I mean, presumably it's a win, but obviously the more goals you score comes in really handy with the tiebreaker and the way it is in this group and in the World Cup in general. With first place sitting there, you know, for the taking potentially. Do you see a very front-footed Jesse Marsh team, as it usually is, against a team that does generally sit very deep?
Sorry, I didn't know if it was taking that. Yeah, he said it's going to be like that, right? And the roof closed. I think I played one game when the roof was closed at BC Place, when the upper deck was open against Mexico. It was all Mexican fans, right? But it's going to be different tonight. And I know what that can be like, and it's going to be loud. It was just, honestly, it was incredible to see what I saw on Friday, Canadian jerseys. I've never seen anything quite like that. I got getting the GO train home. I shared an Uber with some Canada fans and just hearing their stories, right? It's like, and the same, it's going to be the same out West, probably even more so, right? They love their football out there as well. So it's going to be front footed. They're going to need a better start. It's as simple as that. And if you can build off the momentum and play the way they want to play. It's just Qatar can, they'll be okay absorbing the pressure. They're a different team as well from 2022. Mm-hmm. So it'll be an interesting one. Can we break down mm-hmm. that low block? Can one of the, and they've got that counter-attacking threat as well. So
53,000 fans, Dubs, fill that stadium. Mm-hmm. Jesse Marsh is once again very, very excited about the potential for this red out. I've seen a few Qatari shirts around town here, not many. That maroon and red are kind of similar. So regardless, it's going to look pretty good, no matter how many Qatari fans are there. But yeah, it's going to be something pretty special. Dubs, Jesse just said yesterday, he said, Alphonso Davies, he's available for this one.
Yeah.
Do you believe him?
Do I believe him? That, speaking of loaded questions, that's a loaded question. I think it's a big shiny object. I think it's a distraction, and I think it's mind games and seeds that they're planting for Switzerland and beyond. I just hope that the, like, inside those walls, that group, they're focused and they're on the same page. And I don't doubt that, but I do worry that this has become of a little bit of a distraction for the group. And he also mentioned Moise Bambido looking really good in training, and Joel Waterman as well. And I was happy to hear him talk about Joel, because we haven't talked about Joel a lot. He's a fabulous teammate and player. He's been a good servant to the team. And he's a good quality defender. But I think with two defenders on yellows, you know, in Luke de Fougerolle and Alistair Johnston, I already mentioned that I think we might see Nico Seguir at some point, but there might be some substitutions made in the way of your center backs just to protect de Fougerolle for the next game. But I wanted to ask Eddie, do you think that across that front line, we saw the substitutions, a triple sub, and then obviously the big one, which was Jonathan David coming off. Obviously, Laren bags that goal, the Brampton bagsman that he is. But I thought Ali Ahmed really would be giving Jesse Marsh headaches. And I know that maybe how many minutes does he have? How fit is he? How much can he give is a question. But I see him starting. So I wanted to get your take on it.
No, I'm glad you talked about that, because so much of it has been about the Kyle, Jonathan thing, who's going to play up front. But Ali came on and made an impact massively. Mm-hmm. And I think if he's fit, he looked sharp. He looked dynamic. He was good on the ball. He looked like he was playing for Canada in the past, right? And when he came on, and I think BC plays Vancouver Stadium is an important place to him as well, right? Mm-hmm. So that might be a little bit, you know, you get a little extra 5-10% of the players sometimes, and Jesse will be good at finding that, what those moments are, right? It might be, okay, he's playing at back and it's not his home, but that's where he played his football. He made his name for himself. So it might be the right thing to do. But then again, Tejan wasn't quite the Tejan we knew the other day, but does he give him another chance? So we'll see.
I think he probably does, right? I think if Ali comes in, he's probably going to be on the left. Mm-hmm. And that's nothing against what Liam Miller, because he's obviously a very good player, has his moments too. Has that long throw as well, which is a weapon mm-hmm. they use. But Ali mm-hmm. from set pieces is great. And when he was taking that responsibility the last few months for Canada, they were getting some great service from Ali's free kicks.
Mm-hmm. So, Charms, can we also circle back to Dubs's not believing Jesse Marsh? And I think this is your influence, your skepticism, how cynical you've become.
Yes, his cynicism is creeping into everybody.
Yeah, it's creeping into you, Dubs. And the other thing, David, you corrected yourself. I think you've been FIFA'd a little bit with the Toronto State, the BC Stadium, Vancouver Stadium. Yeah. I was like, the BC place? You're allowed to say it.
I didn't know I was on the BBC. I thought I was on the BBC there. Yeah,
I know. There are no standards here.
Hey, Eddie, before we let you go, you mentioned there that you're looking ahead for your career, coaching. Uh-huh. Obviously, you're mm-hmm. involved in coaching. You've been for some time now, right? With one of the greatest teams in Canadian soccer, for sure. In fact, the greatest team in Canadian soccer, let's be honest here. But you have ambitions to be a head coach at some point, and you are looking proactively?
100%. I mean, when I stepped away from Hamilton, it was to spend some time living. I wanted to be a manager, right? So I had to finish my licensing. We had another baby on the way. So I've taken some time to be a dad, which I wasn't able to do for my first two. Obviously, I was able, but I mean, be home when they're mm-hmm. youngsters. And so that, and then finishing my licensing. Like I said, I recently interviewed for a job. Unfortunately, I didn't get it, but it's part of the process. It's exciting. It's all experience for me in having those interview processes. And I'm coaching at Waterloo here locally, these under 20s, the OPL, which is for me a nice group to get my hands on in terms of coaching the way I want to coach. Ticked all the boxes and the licensing, but it's really about not developing a style of play, but just who I want to be. Make mistakes. I can make mistakes at that level. Try out all these new mental skills Dubs I have for these young guys because they need it, these 17-year-old kids. But yeah, it's exciting. So I'm excited about that. But again, I had the media thing gave me that same sort of feeling I had as a footballer and as a coach. And that's, I might need to scratch that itch a little bit because I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that. And it was the way I had to watch the game, with intent and not just like kids running around or watching at the pub. You watch the game, you're into it. It was like being on the bench. It was like being involved that deeply. So yeah, I was excited. So who knows what'll come from that, but.
Well, I mean, there's a little bit more stability in the media world than there is football management. Not much more. But
fine margins.
But I say this, listen, looking at put you in a tough spot here, but the CPL, I mean, for them to eventually see the ascendancy of a former Canadian international who became an assistant coach to becoming a full-time head coach in the CPL, that's their dream. Mm-hmm. That's what they want to see. So
yeah, that's the pathway.
I think we'll be seeing David Edgar at some point on the sidelines of the CPL to start with, and then who knows from there where you go. Just saying, that's purely from a selfish standpoint. Hope we see you in the media as well, because we'll be using you again a lot, because you're great.
I appreciate
Thanks so much for this, mate. Really enjoyed it.
Appreciate that, guys. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the World Cup. Good luck tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks, yeah, well, we'll get you back on at some point, because we need fresh voices.
We need you. We need you for content.
Yeah, you sound great. We got to have you.
Awesome.
Good
mic. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's the mic? It's all about the mic.
I have to say, I'm a bit disappointed. I wanted to ask you just quickly before you go about the ones that a lot of the Brits use, where like the mics are right up against, it almost looks like it's almost got a mouthpiece.
I'm just really
curious about it.
I had that one. I'll send you a picture, but I had to go home and wash my mustache because I didn't know who was using it. But it's the guy kept tapping me. The producer kept tapping me to say, like, put it closer because it has to be right on your lip or there's the sound's not great. So he kept tapping me and I was like that. But yeah, those are the microphones we use.
It's a bit I was hoping we did. When if you're a scuba diver, right, you have to generally shave the moustache if you've got a beard, so it seals better, right?
I think if I shaved any of this, my wife would leave me. So,
yeah, well, trust me, I have a stubble because if I shave my face, my podcast friends ridicule me and say my face is disgusting.
You have no friends on the podcast.
It is.
Yeah, we don't like his face. Colleagues. We like yours though. So come back soon.
Yeah, hey guys,
shave it otherwise. Thanks, Eddie. Cheers,
Eddie. Hold on, before we go, what's your uncle's pub?
McMullen's on Highland.
Everybody, get down to McMullen's on Highland for the game today.
Happy for the shout out. Yeah, big new TVs on. Love it.
We'll send some gin your way.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
I've got some free prime gin. All right.
Oh, thanks, no, I appreciate that. Yeah. Bye-bye.
That is David Edgar, and we will send some gin down there. Absolutely. That's brilliant. That was great insight, though, from a former international. And if you haven't checked out Eddie's golf in Newcastle, back in England, back in the day, just check it out. One of the great goals from a Canadian footballer ever. Brilliant. Great guy. And we're getting back on for sure. Hey, Dub, so Jesse also mentioned how discipline is going to be a focal point in this match. A team that hasn't always been the most disciplined side. But from what he's saying, it seems that if they just go about their game plan and show patience, it should work out today against Qatar. But I wonder at what point will the patience run out. If they don't get an early-ish goal, or at least get some chances, you can see pretty young team maybe getting ahead of themselves. Is that a concern?
Yeah, because they're going to get the chances. So if you go and if you have, you know, the field tilt and you've got the chances, you're creating, you're able to unlock and break down that low block, but you're not being clinical, then you're going to feel that way on this team a lot. Like if they go into the locker room and they're able to keep Qatar, like they're not in behind, they're not getting any chances on the break. Like we've seen Canada offer, like it's been a vulnerability, right? And we've tidied it up a little bit, at least versus Bosnia, didn't see them get loose at all. But you go into the dressing room and it's still nil-nil, but you've had the lion's share of possession and chances. That's a concern to me because it's another piece that you have to manage. And also in Two Guys, I mentioned the yellows to Luke de Fougerolles and to Alistair Johnson, playing physical in the way that David said, getting into a game. And I was similar as like a ball winning number six, where being physical and combative was my bread and butter. And that was my way into the game to make sure that I was engaged properly. It was, yes, through a good first touch and a good first pass, but more than anything, it was through a dual win. It was through a tackle. It was through a header. And I feel like de Fougerolles and Johnson are very much like that as well. A clean tackle, like going in hard. So if they're already a little bit reticent to get stuck in because of the yellow, then that could be of concern. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to end with like our overarching conversation about, you know, the heaviness of the performance. You're going to have Jonathan David, who's watched, you know, we talked about Ronaldo kind of falling flat, but the performances of these top build stars, I think he uses that as motivation. Does it get him out of his slump is another story, right? Because 10 games for Canada, he's got two goals and they're both from the penalty spot. We need something from open play from Jonathan David. But regardless of who is across that front line, I see it as being Ali Ahmed, Kyle Aaron, and Tejon Buchanan with David underneath them. And Ismail Kone, who I think is poised to contribute offensively. You see players, the entirety of that 11 and the bench and the crowd who wants to contribute and try to lift Jonathan David. So I think we're not talking about bad enough, especially the players on the pitch who are going to do their utmost to give David the service and to get him higher up the pitch and involved early. And we know we got that. Yeah, that sitter from 13 yards out, like how much more involved and like perfectly do you want that to fall for you? But I think you see them engineer threat from wide, overloads, speed of play has to be there, incisive movement, and you have to be ruthless in a box, and you have to have Jonathan David taking the lead on that.
We asked several of his teammates about his apparent slump, and they all just basically laughed at us, saying, we got no worries about John David. We know who he is and what he is. He'll be just fine. I found it telling, too, that ahead of the arguably the biggest match in Canadian men's soccer history, they bring up Ismail Kone to sit beside Jesse Marsh in the press conference minus one. Mm. Right? That shows how far that guy's come.
Yeah.
And what an important member of the team he is. They could have brought up Alistair Johnston, Derek Cornelius, Tejon Buchanan, like experienced players, and they chose Ismail Kone. Mm-hmm. Man, do you think that was... From Jesse Marsh's standpoint, he knows what he's doing. Let's elevate this guy as well. Let's make him really feel that he is part of the leadership group, essentially, of this team, which perhaps a year ago he wasn't.
Yeah, for sure. I think that you have internally that leadership council who's still shepherding him along and kind of teaching him about, you know, what you present to the public and how you conduct yourself. But he's a fairly confident guy, but also man of the match, right, versus Bosnia. Yeah. We forget. So maybe it's just a way for Marsh to kind of tip his hat to him. And also, again, going back to the distraction piece, you don't bring your forward. You don't bring somebody who's going to draw attention to the fact that, you know, we should have scored more based on the amount of chances we were able to generate. So you bring a midfielder who drives forward, can chip in when required, but had a really good all around game.
Yeah. Sharms, you have your fortune teller hat on. can we get you to you're around the team, you've seen them all week at training, even though it's only for a limited time, but what is your prognostication? I'm putting you
my
in
prognostication
depth. Yeah.
You want to score?
I do.
Oh, I'm gonna say it's Canada 2-0. They might explode more than that, and I hope they do.
Oh,
they might, but I'm just thinking 2-0 just from what I've seen so far. They seem pretty loose around training from what we've seen.
They look like they're enjoying themselves, right?
No,
like
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
W?
Yeah, 2-0 was what I was thinking. So now I think 3-0 is a lot.
That'd be great.
But what the hell? What the hell? I'll say 3-0. I like it.
Listen, they somewhere deep inside that team there is a 3-0 score.
Yeah. We've seen it's deep down though, Sharms. It's deep down.
It's deep down, yeah. An early goal is so important today. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying 2 minutes in, but inside the first 20 minutes would be extremely important for the confidence, for the vibes, for the good vibes in the stadium.
Mm.
Nothing else. And listen, a lot riding on Vancouver, you know, TFC. Well, Toronto did it, did themselves proud. I think Vancouver will do the same because walking along like Granville Street, any time of day or night, and it is amazing. It's jacked, it's pumping. It's going to be a party for sure. All right, we are out of time. I hope you enjoyed that. Thanks to David Edgar. Make sure you follow us on all our various platforms, our podcast form, our YouTube channel, our Patreon as well, our various Instagram accounts, X, TikTok occasionally. But let us know too on your comments. We use our comments to drive the show, and we'll see you tomorrow and celebrate a famous 2-0 Canada win.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Thank you. Go all about that one. Good, that's great.
Have a good day, y'all.